Okay, let's begin. We're really going to focus on one word in this week's parasha. Being bereshit, I hope that you appreciate, we could easily spend the whole year, or probably our entire lifetimes, on the book of Bereshit. There's just so much to speak about. So rather than try to do everything, we're just going to stay in one word, but the one word is something which is the culmination of two different verses. So let's start and look at those verses. When man sins, the Torah tells us about the result of the sin. What the sin was, we don't know. What they ate, we don't know. Why they ate, we don't know. What the motivation is, we don't know. What the change that took place in them, we don't know. What happened before, and now what's the situation with them afterwards? All of this we don't know. So at least let's at least recognize that we don't know that. But what we are told is, in the first source, Vatipakachna Enei Shnehem, both of their eyes were opened up. What does that mean, their eyes were opened up? And presumably their eyes were not closed prior to this. Vayed'u, and now they achieve some kind of knowledge or understanding. Where, of course, the word v'yedu should not be lost, the significance shouldn't be lost upon us, because what they ate from was the tree of knowledge, Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra. Now, v'yedu, ki erumim heim. Now they knew that they were naked. Now the question is, beforehand they didn't know they were naked, or beforehand they weren't naked? Right, you do recognize there's two possibilities. But now they knew they were naked. Vayitperu alei te'ena, vayasu lahem chagorot. And they made for themselves what's called over here alei te'ena. They made for themselves fig leaves, vayasu lahem chagorot, and they made for themselves, over here the translation is aprons. The purpose of the fig leaf was just simply to cover up the nakedness. And I guess the first, and maybe this is really too simple of a question, why did they choose fig leaves? They're in the Garden of Eden. There's all kinds of things they could use. Why did they choose fig leaves? Because of this, the Gemara is willing to entertain and even to settle on the identification of the tree. Which tree was it? What kind of tree was it? And we don't know. Middle-aged Christian art would lead you to believe it was apples. Quite unlikely it was apples. Or, let me put it this way, it's quite unlikely that in rabbinic Judaism they would have identified it with apples, because there were no apples in the Middle East. So the rabbis who were talking about it certainly would not have spoken an apple. If there were apples in Europe, then it makes sense they would have identified it with apples. But again, the apple is really a function of art. Maybe if you behave and we have time, we'll come back to another issue of art, more famous issue of art a little bit later. If you behave. You see, you're already not behaving. You're already not behaving. And the Gemara wants to say that they just partook from the tree. Now their eyes are opened. Now they realize that they're naked. So they grab the first thing, which is handy. So the first thing would be handy, would be something in close proximity. And therefore they cover themselves with fig leaves. And therefore the Gemara wants to identify the tree, which was the forbidden tree. The forbidden fruit was actually from the fig. I don't know, you like figs? I don't like figs, so I'm willing to boycott figs because of this. And it says they made themselves chagorot. Afterwards, and we're skipping from Pasuk Zion to Pasuk Kaf Aleph, but still in the first source. Afterwards, after the entire investigation, trial, sentencing, we have another verse which finishes up the treatment of Adam and Eve. Vayas Hashem Elokim la'adam uli'ishtok tonot or v'yel b'shem. And God made for man and his wife coats of leather, coats of or, skin or leather coats. He made them leather jackets. V'yel b'shem, and he clothed them. Now, what's the difference between the chagorot, which they did for themselves, versus the Ketonot Or, which was done for them. Excuse me? I don't know. Okay. He made for them coats. Now, what's the difference here? Presumably, the difference is very simple.
Quality, coverage.
For quality, coverage,
permanence.
What? Warmth. Which means the fundamental difference is the difference between covering yourself up from being naked versus being clothed. And that's not the same thing. Which is Adam and Eve, and it's like a scene of desperation. There's this sudden realization that they are absolutely, totally naked in public, which is, you know, certainly coming from our world, a completely humiliating experience. And as quick as they can, they do what they can to cover themselves up. Despite the sin and despite the alienation, God does something which I think is incredibly tender and incredibly important. God takes humiliated, alienated man and helps him. God takes Adam and Eve and gives them clothing, not just clothing to cover themselves up, but he gives them something which would give them shelter from the elements. Again, the difference over here is the covering versus vayalbishem, and he clothed them. Clothing, though, could be used in various fashions. No pun intended. Clothing could be used simply to cover up, or clothing could be used to make a statement. I mean, obviously, you know, there is a whole fashion industry which will make some people a lot of money because they'll slightly change a hemline or slightly change the shape or something of clothing. And as I said, you know far more about this than I do. But is clothing something which is simply used to cover one up, or is there something more of it? And if I'm not being clear yet, what was naked about them? Was it that their bodies have now somehow changed? Or was it that their souls had somehow changed? Which means, if you were to think about eating from this terrible, magical, destructive tree, what kind of change would you have expected? Would you have expected a physical change that took place within them? Or would you have expected primarily a spiritual change to have taken place? Right? You would have expected a spiritual change. Now, it could be that the spiritual change that took place caused them to have this feeling of humiliation, this feeling of alienation, this feeling of nakedness. But again, the body is affected and the soul is affected. But what do? They cover up the body, and now we're still left questioning, now what happened to the soul? What happened to the soul which somehow has been changed? Rav Soloveitchik, when he discussed these verses, he brought in the second source from Yeshayahu. Sos asis b'Hashem, tagel nafshi ba'alokai. I greatly rejoice in the Lord, my whole being exalts in my God. Ki halbishani bigde yesha, for he has clothed me with the garments of triumph. Mi'il tztaka ya'ateini. He wrapped me in a robe of victory. Kichatan yichahein pe'er v'chakala ta'adeh cheleha. Like a bridegroom adorned with a turban and like a bride bedecked with a finery. But over here, when it speaks about the clothing, it speaks about clothing in a very different way. It's tagel nafshi pe'elokai. My soul is rejoicing with God. Why? Ki hilbashani bigde yesha. For God has clothed me in the clothing of salvation. When Adam and Eve eat from the tree, what have they lost? They've lost the clothing of salvation. And when they lose the clothing of salvation, the warmth, the protection of God, the nearness to God, God cuddling them like a mother would to a child in the Garden of Eden. And when they lose that salvation, what then happens? Then they suddenly feel naked. But what do? Do they cover up and try to fix the soul, or do they cover up the body? And what happens is that now they're only focusing on the body, and they clothe up the body, and just to cover the nakedness, not even to have clothing of salvation, not even have clothing which will protect them. What God then gives them is something which will protect them. But protect what? Protect the body or to protect the soul? So God gives them something which now will protect the body. Which means, even though there's sin, and even though there's alienation, Adam and Eve apparently are operating now on much more of what I would call an instinctual, animalistic type of level, even though you'll tell me now, but animals have no sense of nakedness. But what God does is he gives them clothing of animals. Again, appreciate the significance. You have abandoned your souls. You have abandoned that connection with God. You have acted on a more instinctual level. You saw an apple, as it were, and you had to have it, and you had to have it then. So now what have you done? You've acted instinctually as an animal does, and God then clothes them with animal clothing. Which means, even though on the one hand there's something beautiful about God still taking care of his creation, and you can even tell me he's taking care of his creation on the level which they now exist, but there's a tragedy involved in this. And again, the tragedy is not even Adam and Eve frantically trying to cover their nakedness. It's the fact that they're naked. It's the fact that something now has been lost, and it's the big deyesha, it's the clothing of salvation, which is no longer there. Which means it's their souls which are naked at this point, and it's their souls that remain naked. You know, I teach young people, not implying that you're not young, but I teach college students. Not implying that you're not college students. But we live in a generation that people are far more willing to take off their clothes than they are to bear their souls to someone. And it's a deep emotional relationship, spiritual relationship, is something which people are totally frightened of, but a quick physical relationship is something which people are completely ready to have. But I'll stress that point to them, that they're more willing to bear their bodies than their souls. But part of the problem is that they're not in touch with their souls. Part of the problem is they don't even know what situation their souls are in, and that their souls themselves may be completely naked. And their souls are what need nurturing. Their souls would need clothing. Their souls are what need the big deyesha. And part of the problem of clothing is that we will tend to identify ourselves in terms of the clothing that we're wearing, even though our souls remain completely naked. And it's there's a theme which I've stressed before, and I'm not the first one to point it out, that the very word for clothing, beged, has a connotation of bigida, of rebellion. Me'il, a coat, has a connotation of me'ila, which means stealing, which means clothing is something which can be very confusing because we dress up, and we all dress up. And when we dress up, then sometimes we become the person who we dress up. Now the question is the clothing identifying the inner spiritual sense? Or is the clothing completely covering up the spiritual sense? And I'm not talking about tzniut now. I'm talking about something which is far more profound than tzniut. Because tzniut is often used as a way of only looking at certain aspects of the physical body. And over here, what we're really talking about is aspects of the soul. So, just to take that last point one step further, if you look in source number 3, the Targum Onkelos writes, translates, Vavad Hashem Elokim la'adam ula itate levushin dikar. He gives them, what's yakar mean? Valuable. He gives them good clothing, which means till now they had flimsy leaves, flimsy fig leaves sewn together, which we all recognize could not stand necessarily even for one day, much less through weeks and months. And God gives them good clothing. That's what Onkelos focuses on. Now there is a technical problem over here. The technical problem is if he gave them leather clothing, where did God get the leather from? So Targum Yonatan beautifully tells us, and this is found also, if I'm not mistaken, in the Pirkei de Rabbi, source 4. If you want, you can read the Yonatan in the original, which is the top line of 4, or you can read it in its Hebrew translation, which is, I know, very funny. The Yonatan is a translation to Aramaic, but this is a translation back into Hebrew. Vayas Hashem Elokim l'adam l'ishto levushei kavod, that's the yakar, levushei kavod, me'or hanachash. Shepashat mimenu al or bisrehim, which means we're looking around for leather. So I don't know if you've ever worn a snake skirt, but this is what it says. It says that because again, it's doing the same thing that the Gemara did. What did the Gemara do? The Gemara says when it came to the fig leaves, where did they get a fig leaf? Well, therefore it must have been a fig tree. So now over here we have a problem of leather. Now where are we going to get leather from? Well, there's only one animal right over here in proximity, and it's the snake. And what do snakes do? They shed their skin. So therefore you have snake skin. What? We're okay now? I don't know, I always imagine they were having a barbecue with the animal that was killed afterwards. No, that's not what happened. Right, so I guess they'll be happy.
There's also something about figs that they have a sort of a sexual nature. You need a male and a female fig tree in proximity to each other for them to...
Well, I'm very young and innocent. I don't know about such things.
It has to be one of the...
Avocado as well. Avocado also needs that.
A lot of trees.
Right, a lot of trees do. Okay, so you think... Look, I was trying to stay away from all the sexual connotation today. I was really trying. I was trying to behave today, but they're real in terms of the whole sexual connotation. There's many, many things to speak of. Years ago, we spoke about the whole relationship between the Nachash and Chava, but there's an interesting comment of the Or HaChaim. So I knew that Jane was going to bring this up. And the Or HaChaim, it's in Kedoshim, Perek Yud Tet, on the verse Kaf Vav, Lo Tochlo Ahadam, don't eat blood. Now, right before this, it had from Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Ki Tavog Al Aretz Unatatem Kol Eitz Ma'achal, when you get to the land of Israel, you need to plant all kinds of trees, Va'ar Latem Or Lato Et Priyav, which means that you need to keep it for 3 years, it will be Orla. So this is a rule in the land of Israel. You plant a fruit tree, you're not allowed to eat the fruit of a tree for the first 3 years. By the way, it's not the first 3 years of fruit, it's 3 years from the time that it's planted. Okay? Now this idea of 3 years, and afterwards it says don't eat blood. So Or HaChaim over here comments, Samocha katuv mitzvah zul mitzvah orla, l'rmoz masha amru ki adam harishon mashach chata bechila etadat kodem zman hatiro shehu bechinat orla, that Adam ate from the tree before its time, which is a sin of orla. Orla, you can eat it, but you have to wait 3 years. Over here, the tree, according to the Or HaChaim, was allowed to be eaten from, but he ate from it too soon. She'im hoya mamtin ad leil Shabbat kodesh, hoya mikadesh al hayayin. Now, the Or HaChaim is following the Zohar and not the Gemara. The Zohar believes the tree was grapes, and believes that, I guess, wearing grape leaves would have even been worse than fig leaves. But he believes that it's grapes, and therefore the sin was not waiting for Friday night. And he said, had he waited for Friday night, squeezed the grapes into a glass, and made kiddush Friday night, then the whole world would have been different. And therefore the problem was eating something too soon, and that's the problem of Orla. Vizehu so divreihem, and that is the mystical understanding behind the Gemara, she'amru adam moshech ba'orla tohaya, that Adam, what it accuses him over here, is what's called pulling the Orla. Now, this is probably one of the most bizarre things you'll ever hear about, but we know about this from the Gemara, especially during the Greek period. If anybody ever talks to you about social pressure, during the Greek period, Jews who were circumcised were very embarrassed to go to the public bath being circumcised, so they performed surgery on themselves in order to visually undo the circumcision. Now, that's considered to be a very bad thing. I mean, being circumcised in Judaism is a good thing. Not being circumcised is not a great thing. But being circumcised and to uncircumcise, again, do surgery to try to uncircumcise yourself is not a wonderful thing to do. Just think about that without anesthetics. And again, social pressure is just an unbelievable thing, but that's what caused them to do it. But this also represents somebody who's actively doing what they can to reject the covenant with God. Because a brit also means covenant. So it says that Adam harishon moshech orlato, so that then creates this whole wonderful fantasy. On the one hand, I have to say then that Adam originally was circumcised. How was that? You know, where was the moel? Who was the sandik? So according to the Gemara, Adam was born perfect. If he's born perfect, how was he born? He was born circumcised. What does Adam then do? Which means, don't just focus now on the physical aspect of this. It's a spiritual aspect. Adam HaRishon was born on a high spiritual level. He's born perfect in every single way. His soul is complete. What happens then? He does something to rebel against God. What is the metaphor the Gemara uses to speak about his rebellion? Moshech Orlato. That he stretched the Orla. Now, somebody who is not circumcised is called an Orla. Fruit before its time is called Orla. Ostensibly, one thing has nothing to do with the other. I remember once I was in a certain synagogue in Manhattan, and the rabbi who was a Talmud Chacham talked about Orla, and he translated into English as uncircumcised fruit. And I'm sure most people in the audience had no idea what he was talking about. Uncircumcised fruit. Could be Manhattan. He's correct. I don't know. Is there a connection to Orlot? So the Or HaChaim here says absolutely there is a connection. And therefore the fruit of the tree consumed too early and the foreskin are somehow connected to one another. Now what's interesting about this is that the clothing that Adam receives is clothing of skin. What?
The skin comes back on.
And as I said, if you want to focus on the sexual aspects, it also speaks in terms of Eve, in terms of the pain of losing the virginity, and it identifies that also as skin or unnecessary skin. So therefore, it creates a parallel between the sins of Adam and Eve, causing a lack of ability of intimacy because of extra skin, and that is the Orla, which is referred to, and that is that God gave them clothing of skin is all connected over here. The truth is there's many, many more levels to speak about this, but this is just on one level. Now, Rashi in source 5 tells us, Tonot Or, which again we can translate as coats of skin, leather coats. Yesh divrei agada omrim chalakim kitziporin, that it was smooth as a nail, as a fingernail. Hoyu midubukim al oron, was on their skin. Yesh omrim davar haba min haor, something that comes from leather, kigon semer arnavim shehurach v'cham vasal lehem ktenot mimenu, that he gave them rabbit coats. rabbit coats are furry, rabbit coats are warm, and that's what God made for them. God made for them it's not leather, it's fur coats. The other side of the fur is the leather, and God made for them fur coats. And that's Rashi, of course, living in France, Germany, you know, and thinking about what's unprotected in the winter, having a nice warm fur coat seems like a very attractive thing. But Rashi, this is not something which Rashi is making up from his own imagination. This is something which Rashi is adapting from the Midrash. But let's look at the Midrash. Vayas Hashem Elokim la'adam u'lishto k'tonot or v'yal bishem. B'torato sh'Rav Meir matzu katuv. In Rabbi Meir's Torah, they found that it was written k'tonot or, coats made out of light, or k'tonot, coats of light. Elu bigdei odem arishon shehim domim lepigam o lepanas rechavim milamata vitzarim milamala. That what was made for them. So it says it was found in Rav Meir's Torah. When Rav Meir taught this, what did he teach? What did he actually teach? That what were the k'tonot? Or. Now when you say or, it could be spelled two different ways. Unless Rabbi Meir was Yemenite, then he would have pronounced it differently. But apparently in Rabbi Meir, when he taught or, but when they opened up his books and they looked inside his books, what did they find? Lo and behold, that in his books it didn't say or, skin, leather, with an ayin, rather it said or, meaning light, with an aleph. So therefore, if you ask if this is a mistake, tonot or, so we're following right now Rabbi Meir's teaching. Of course, the question is, what does this mean? If you continue in the rest of the Midrash, you find where Rashi got his source from. Rashi quotes the continuation of this in terms of the translucent, like the fingernails, and so on. Now, what exactly does this mean when it says b'toratosha of Meir? In Rabbi Meir's Torah, they saw or. Does that mean literally, in his five books of Moshe, he had a different word in it, or does it mean something else? The Torah Tamima in source number 8 says, "V'Torah Tosher of Meir Matzu Katuv K'tonot Or Ba'Alef V'Katvu HaMefarshim V'Torah Tosher of Meir B'Chidushei Torah Shelo." That the Mefarshim explain it means in his own books, not in a Torah, real Torah book. Avaladati Ein Haloshon B'Torah To Mechuvan LePerush Zeh. He goes, it doesn't really fit in the words that well. V'Yoter Nir Alef Areisha Haya Midar Kosher of Meir Lasot Rimazim V'Chidushim K'tzarim B'Tzidei HaGilyon Me'Asefer Shelamad Bo. What the Torah Tamima prefers to suggest is that Rabbi Meir had this written in his margin, which means his Torah looked like yours, just like you have a Chumash, he had a Chumash, his Chumash had the exact same text as everybody, but in his margin he made a comment. And what was his comment? His comment is that over here he spelt or with an aleph instead of with an ayin. If Soloveitchik said something very similar, the way that he suggested it, it's like what you would call a ktiv and a kri. That what makatuv, what's written, it's written or with an ayin. What's the kri, according to Rav Meir, how do you pronounce it? You pronounce it or, and according to this, Rav Meir could have been Yemenite, and he could have pronounced the two differently, but he claimed that this is a ktiv and kri, that sometimes we have some letters in the Torah written one way, pronounced another way, because both traditions are significant. What exactly does this mean when Rav Meir teaches us that it was really God made for them skins of light? If you look at source 11, Rabbeinu Bachaye, he writes in the beginning, Al derech hapshat, asal lehem al bushim me'ulim v'nechpadim me'or, yit'atfu behem kol gufam derech kavod. You want pshat? He says pshat is that he made them leather garments to protect them, dignified garments, in order that they can walk around with dignity. Right, rather than, I'll skip a little bit, im ya'amdu ba'oton chagorot chasulam lechsot pasai erva bilvad. Because what the fig leaves did, they just covered up the nakedness, but they didn't protect them. There's no dignity involved. This was clothing of dignity. He then wants to know where the leather came from, and he suggests it's sort of like the tachash that was at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, a one-time creation that was used to make some things in the Mishkan. And he says maybe it was the same thing. It was an animal that we don't know what it was, and it was made because it's one of the things that was used to make the Mishkan. So according to the Gemara, it was created for the Mishkan. It somehow appeared. According to the Midrash, it was many colored. How do you? There's a word for that in English? I guess multicolored. It was like an animal that looked like a peacock. Then in the next paragraph he writes about Alderach HaMidrash. Till now I told you pshat, but you want to know the Midrash. Ktonot or b'taratel shu b'meir haya katuv ktonot or v'kavana shehil b'shama kadosh baruch hu minei ma'alot u'ma'orot min ha'or ha'ilyon shehoyu b'gan Eden ke'in mo shezacha lehen bahar u'me'ma'alat ha'malbish tuchalamod ma'alat ha'lavush ki ha'kavana b'hem l'chiyot la'olamim u'lehiyotam kemalchei ha'sharet. So we'll spend hopefully the rest of today explaining this second comment of Rabbeinu Bachaye, where he tells us that if you want to understand the clothing, you need to know a little bit about the person who's providing the clothing, or the being that's requiring the clothing. God is providing the clothing, so what kind of clothing would it be? So he's saying, you know, if you go shopping, I don't know where you're supposed to go shopping anymore, but if you go shopping in some famous department store or from some famous designer, you'll get clothing which somehow represent the designer. But if you get clothing from God, then theoretically you'll be getting clothing which should somehow represent God. So therefore, Rabbeinu Bachaye is saying the meaning of this midrash is that Rabbi Meir recognizes that if God is providing the clothing, then this should somehow reflect something divine. And then he goes one step further and he says that, let's think a second. What did Adam lose? What did Adam and Chava lose when they ate from the tree? Well, one thing that we know is beforehand they were supposed to live forever. So he makes this connection and says, what does that mean they were supposed to live forever? That means prior to this, they were supposed to be like Malchei Hasharet. They were supposed to be like angels. Now that they have eaten from the tree, they lost their angelity. They've lost their angelity, and now they've become humans. They've lost eternity. So what is God going to give them? God is going to give them something which reflects back to the original spiritual clothing which they had and now was lost. So according to Rav Meir, what did they receive now? Now they still have this touch of divinity or this touch of eternity or this touch of somehow being like angels, and that is what Rav Meir is trying to tell us. But he also made an interesting analogy along the way, and he said, sort of like Moshe. So I guess we should look at Moshe. Look at the next source. Source 12. By the way, when Moshe came down, it says that he glowed. How does it spell? With an ayin or with an aleph? Because you're looking already. I didn't say that. You don't trust me anymore now. I told you we'll get to more, right? Okay. Vayehi beredet Moshe mehar Sinai, u'shnei luchot ha'edut b'yad Moshe beredeto min ahar. Moshe comes down and he has the two tablets in his hands. U'Moshe lo yada ki karan or. What does karan or mean?
So that his skin beamed.
Okay, good. What is the word, excellent, what does the word Karan or mean? Karan is right. So Michelangelo was wrong, okay? What does the word mean? Karan or. Karan means okay, let's go back a second. What does or mean?
Skin.
What is, we're being told about Moshe's skin. You know, this sounds like a soap commercial. What? No, Koran or. His skin glowed. Right, by the way, does it say anything here about a horn?
Not yet.
No, it doesn't say, it doesn't say Karen, it doesn't say horns, it says Koran or?
Uniform.
Ah, the uniform.
It's a verb.
There's not, yeah, the word.
It says karan.
Karan, or his skin glowed. Is it on my paper?
No,
I can't see them. I can't see them anymore, but they are here.
Correct.
But even if I say Karen, I mean.
But even according to the grammar.
The grammar doesn't work otherwise. Knowledge of Hebrew would have helped greatly in creating art, because that way you would actually know what the word means. Vayar Aharon v'chol b'nei Yisrael t'moshe v'hine Koran or Panav. By the way, you can't make a mistake if you actually know the words. What does Koran or Panav mean? The skin of his face glowed. It does not say that he has a horn sticking off the middle of his face. This is, I mean, what about the word Panav? You notice the word Panav here? Koran or Panav. His face is glowing. Now, over here, it's certainly written with an ayin, right? We have no question about this, correct? Even though I can show you more than 50 different commentators in different places who quote this verse with an aleph. Not because there's any text with an aleph, but because their mind plays tricks on them. And they remember it being with an aleph, because it's sort of, no, it's light. His face is full of light. But again, it goes back to the grammar. The Quran is where the light is. But what Rabbeinu Bachai was saying is that when Rabbi Meir is telling us about the or with an ayin, the leather, and he says, no, there's or there as well, that there can at times be a connection between skin, leather, or, and between or, light. Where do you see such a connection? We see such a connection by Moshe. There's also another verse in Habakkuk, which you don't have in front of you, but you have the Rashi in source 13 commenting on it. Let me read to you the verse first. Perek Gimel Pasuk Dalet, Vinoga ki'or tihyeh karnayim miyadolo visham chavyon uza. Vinoga, noga is light. Vinoga ki'or, Noga is going to come out and shine, or with an aleph. Karnayim miyadolo, rays of light. Karnayim over here means rays of light will come out. Rays of light, and the again, I'm sorry you don't see in front of you. Look at the Rashi, which you do see. Ke'or tihyeh, or with an aleph. Ke'or hamyuchad shel shiv yimei bereishit haya. That what light are we talking about? The light from the 7 days of creation. Which light is that?
Organus.
That's the light, the organus. That's the light before the sin. That's the light which Adam and Chava lost. Karnayin, lashon me'or kishahu nukav v'zarach derech hanekev. Okay, if you want to do an experiment afterwards, you have a lot of light, and then you have something blocking the light, but then you have a little hole. You'll have a ray of light coming through the hole. Read it again. Lashon ma'or kishu nokev v'zoreach derech hanekev nir'ah kimin karnayim boltim. It will look like rays of light coming up. V'chein, and that's what it means in the verse, ki karan or panav. By the way, Michelangelo's not so bad. He's got a Rashi to back him up. He's got a Rashi to back him up, because what is Rashi saying is that as the light is coming off of Moshe, it looks like rays of light. Ki Koran, so he's saying, is the rays coming off. And what do those rays look like? They could look like horns. But again, that would depend. To look like horns, you would need something else. You would need on the top of the head these two little holes over there. But it's saying that no, they're over here, what Rashi means, it's sort of like when you make pictures of the sun, with just like the rays coming up in every direction. That's what Moshe looks like. Moshe looks like the sun, which I think is something which Chazal tell us, that Moshe is like the sun and Yeshua is like the moon. Moshe is like the sun with rays of light coming off of Moshe. That's what it means, ki karav. So the word ray over here is similar to Karan. Karen is related to it, but it still doesn't mean that Moshe has horns. Okay? And by the way, if you didn't come for any other reason than this, I can now tell you Jews do not have horns, despite their occasionally acting demonically.
Unless they have light horns.
Unless they have light horns. It's hard to sculpt light, I guess.
That's how they draw the saints.
What?
That's how they draw the saints. All of the Christian saints have this light coming out of the big halo.
Yeah, why can't Moshe have a halo? Yeah. What's the matter? What do you do wrong? Why not? Yes.
Do you think it's a coincidence that they attributed this to Meir?
Very good, very good. Excellent. We'll come back to that. With Moshe having light, go to source 18 for a moment. This is a Rashi commenting on Moshe's birth. What does it say? She saw Kitovhu, that he was good. So what does it say here? Kitovu, kishnolad, when Moshe was born, nitmalei habayit kulo ora. That means that Moshe's glow is already there from infancy, although apparently something else happens by her sinai. Now again, according to the Gemara, according to certainly the way that Rashi and Tosfot understand the Gemara, when it says the Midrash that God put these crowns on all the Jews when they said Naseh v'nishma, according to the Gemara, or certainly according to the Zohar, that's when they get back the light that they had lost by eating from the tree. The light that comes, the crowns, what do crowns look like? Rays of light. When it says that all that the angels came, when the Jews said Na'aseh v'nishma, and they get crowns on their heads, what it's trying to tell us is that they got the rays of light. And then it continues to say that all the Jews, when they sinned with the golden calf, lost the crowns. So it says, but all of the light then went and became concentrated, and it all went to Moshe, and that's the light of Moshe. The Moshe then encapsulated all 600 and whatever thousand Jews, and he had the light of all of them. But what's interesting is that then you have this original light which is lost, comes back to Am Yisrael, is then lost again, and is now with Moshe. And what Rabbi Meir comes and tells us is that the clothing of light, or the clothing which Adam and Eve received, was really clothing of light. Yes.
Isn't that what it's about?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Then why did they lose it in Garden of Eden?
Because
they didn't do a mitzvah. They did the first Avira. The Avira caused the loss of light. Absolutely. Correct. No, he but it's the second time. That's the
Yes, but the first time they don't see.
Yes. Yeah, so again, according to okay, but according to Rashi and Tosfot, he only gets it after they sin, which means he now has the light of all Klal Yisrael. I'll try to explain this to, if we have some time. Source 14. 14 and 15 are both based on the same source. Source 14 is Sefer HaLikutim, which is based on the Arizal, which is based on the Zohar. V'sod inyan ki adam harishon kodam shachata hayalo zehira ila'a. He had this supernal divine light upon him. Shahaya muluvash milavush ruchani shehu or. Adam before the sin wasn't naked. What did Adam have before the sin? Bigdayesha, clothing of salvation. What kind of clothing did he have? He had this light of God upon him. V'sod hazehira ila shaitalo kimoshi yadua. Midrash Rashi Hanishamot v'kevod shachata oto zihira nistalka mimenu. When he sinned, he lost the light. K'nedua misefer hazohar parashat Bereishit daf lamed vav. Reisha midrit v'zelo shano v'tipachna enish nehem v'yadu ki urumim heim da'avdu zihira ila'a da'hava chafi alayhu. They knew they were naked. Why do they know they were naked? Because they weren't naked before. What did they have before? Before they had the glow of the light upon them, they weren't naked. So what were they naked from now, if that was English? What are they now naked from? They're now naked from the lost light. That's the approach of the Zohar. They weren't naked before. Now they became naked. The Rikanati in 15 quotes the same Zohar. And you can read the Zohar in English after 15. I gave you a little bit more to read from it, but you can read it afterwards. It does say at the very end of it, afterwards God clothed Adam in garments soothing to the skin, as written, he made them coats of skin. At first they had coats of light, or, which procured them the service of the highest of the high, for the celestial angels used to come to enjoy the light. So it is written, for thou hast made him but little lower than the angels, and crowned him with glory and honor. Now after their sins they had only coats of skin, good for the body, but not good for the soul. Which is exactly the issue. Rabbi Meir. What? Yes? Correct. I'm not punning. She is. Let me start with another verse that Rabbi Meir had in his margin. Source number 7. B'Torato Shel Rabbi Meir, Matzu Katuv, in Rabbi Meir's Torah, it's written, they found it written, V'hinei Tov Ma'od, V'hinei Tov Mavet. That it was very good, at the end of creation it was very good. Rav Meir writes, Mavet, death. Now, death being good is something which is very difficult for us to understand. If you'll be honest, then also knowing about the light versus skin is not that easy for us to understand. But let's see which Gemara to start with Rav Meir. What did Rabbi Meir do as a vocation? Anyone know? Source 23. V'ha'amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel mishum Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda said, in the name of Shmuel, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Kishayiti lo meitzer Rabbi Kiva hayiti matil kan kunatam l'toch adyo v'lo yili devar. U'kishabati eitzer Rabbi Shmuel amar li b'ni, ma malachtecha, what do you do for a living? What's your job? Mayor, what do you do? Amarti lo lavlar ani. Anybody know what a lavlar is? The word that you would use is? No. Lavlar is a sofer, a writer. Lavlar ani. Amarli, he said, Bini, have zahir b'malachtecha. Be very careful with your job. Shemalachtecha malchut shemayim hi. Your job is the job of heaven. Shema ata mechaser ot echad, omiyater ot echad, nimtzat machrivet kolam kulo. Because if a letter will be missing or a letter will be extra, you'll destroy the whole world can be destroyed. Which means he's saying every word of the Torah is holy. By the way, what didn't he say? He didn't say if you change a word. I guess it didn't even occur to him about changing a letter. So again, let's go back a second. Rabbi Meir is a sofer. Rabbi Meir writes Sifrei Torah. Presumably in the margin of his Torah, we don't believe that he changed the text. In fact, quite the opposite. He's very careful about his job. He's very careful about writing the text. In the margin of his text, it says or with an ayin, skin, and he changes it to or. It says ma'od, he changes it to mavet. Which means he's telling us there's various levels of understanding these verses. But, again, if you ask about his name being Meir, let's go... It's like the jars that you'd use with the ink. It's like how he would get the ink onto the quill. What's the? You pour the ink. You put the thing in the jar. Look at source 9. Amar Rabbi Acha bar Chanina. Rabbi Acha the son of Chanina said. Galui v'yaduah lefnei misha amav v'hoya olam. He who said and the world came into being, which is a very interesting description of God because it's going back to God of creation. What did God say when God created? Yehi or. Okay? Let there be light. He who spoke and the world came into being, what's known? She'ein b'doro shir b'meir kemoto. There is no one else like a b'meir. B'nei ma lo kavu halacha kemoto. But why is the halacha not established according to Rav Meir, if he is so great? Shelo yachlu chaverav la'amod al sov da'ato, because his colleagues could not understand what he was talking about. Shehu amar al tamei tahor umarelo panim, al tahor tamei umarelo panim. Is that he would say what they thought was impure was pure, what they thought was pure was impure, and he would show them why it was. Which means his logic was just so advanced that they knew that he was wrong, but they just couldn't disprove it. Tana, further it's taught, Lo Rabbi Meir Shemo, Ela Rabbi Nehurai Shemo. His real name wasn't Meir, his real name was Nehurai. What does Nehurai mean? It also means light. V'lama nekor shemo Rabbi Meir, shehu meir enei chachamim b'halacha. That he enlightened people with halacha. V'lo nerai shemo, the Rabbi Nechemya shemo. V'lama l'Rabbi Elazar ben Arach shemo. V'lama nekor shemai Nehurai, sheman hir enei chachamim b'halacha. Again, he caused light to come into the world. So as far as the connection of Rabbi Meir and light, here the Gemara certainly identifies it. It continues and it goes on to say something interesting. I'm a Rebbe. Hay demachad dana michavrai. The fact that I'm sharper than my friends, I guess it's not so nice to say this about yourself, but if you're Rebbe, then you have to know it, because what does Rebbe do? Rebbe is the one who publishes the Mishnah. The Mishnah that Rebbe publishes, where does he get it from? He gets it from Rebbe Meir, which is all based upon the teachings of Rebbe Akiva. The Mishnah that we have today is the Mishnah of Rebbe Meir's notes, Rebbe Meir taking notes of the lectures of Rebbe Akiva. Who's the one who publishes? Rebbe. Who's Rebbe? Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. Rebbe Yehuda Anasi says, if I am the leading rabbi of the world, and he is, and if I am somehow blessed more than my friends, it's for one reason. What's the reason? Dechazite leRabbi Meir me'achore. I saw the back of Rabbi Meir once. By the way, that's also very interesting. Because, you know, the whole thing about Moshe glowing, one of the reasons the Mefarshim given for his glow has to do when God, Arina Kvodecha, and then God says, you can see my back, you can't see my front. He goes in the cleft of the rock, and he sees the back, and that's where the light comes from. Which means over here, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi is saying, the mission that we have is based on Rebbe Meir, and why? Because I was able to see his back. Seeing the back, there's also a lot more to talk about, but we must limit ourselves to our 8 pages of sources that we want to finish. In source 10, there's a Hasidic commentary. Be'er Mayim Chaim writes on Bereshit, Paragimel, which is talking about the Ketonot Or. He writes about the Or of knowledge and the Or of Torah, and he writes, Va'amnon kol kach haya gadol v'rav ad she'ir kol nishmato v'gufo afilu al kol mal bushav. It's talking about Elazar ben Pedat, that there was this glow about him, and once he was learning, there was a snake around his leg, which definitely takes you back to Gan Eden, and he didn't even pay attention to the snake, and just people saw the glow in him. V'nachzor le'inyur of Meir, ashaya b'torato na'aseh or panav ora mamash, v'alkein omru shahoye me'ir p'necham chamim balacha, is that it turned his skin into light. That Rabbi Meir's skin became or, which means what you notice about the name Rabbi Meir, over here the Be'er Mayim Chaim is identifying that clearly. If we can try, and what I'm going to do now is not all that simple, but if we can try to maybe go a little bit deeper, and we're getting to the cusp of some very interesting and important Kabbalistic teachings, let us go back for a second to the end of Source 14. The last part is underlined. This is back in the Sefer Likutim, based on the Arizal. It says, V'acha shachata adam rishon nevchu hakotnot me'or le'or. That I am, where it's underlined, the end of the third line, from the bottom of the underlined lines. V'achar shachata, and now it's the second underlined line, Adam HaRishon. Nevchu haktonot me'or la'or. When Adam sinned, it turned his coat from light into skin. V'hapnimiyut shebehem, shehu ha'or, and the inside of it, the, what's, how do you say pnimiyut in English? It's the essence. It's the essence and not the exterior. The interior. Hapnimiut shebehem shehu haor lachu chanoch ve'eliyahu kinodam midoresh shorshei hanushamot. those of you who have good knowledge of people's souls, and you look at people, you can see and identify their souls, and we're, no, you can't do this? Well, according to the Arizal's followers, he was able to do this. He would look at a person, and by the way, it says that he would look at a person and see a light on top of their heads, and he would then tell them, well, I guess if you're from California, it's called auras, right? He would see, what?
Aura.
He would see people's aura, and he would tell them what their neshama was made of, and who they were, and so on. And the Arizal says, if you understand what's really going on over here, this primordial light goes from Adam and Chava, they get it replaced with or, with skin, but this light goes on to Chanoch and Eliyahu. Now you need to understand why Chanoch and Eliyahu of all people. So Chanoch and Eliyahu have something in common. What is it? Not correct, and not just they never die, there's one other thing about them. They both became angels. Eliyahu, I assume you know about, because he had much better PR, right, than Chanoch did. So let's look about Chanoch. That's only if we find it. Yes. Source 28. Again, we're going to read the Targum Yonatan in Hebrew, which is the second part of Source 28. Vayavod Chanoch be'emet lefnei Hashem, v'hinei enenu im toshvei ha'aretz, ki nilkach v'ala l'rakia b'mamar lefnei Hashem, v'yikra shemo metatran hasofer hagadol. There was a man named Chanoch, he went up into heaven, he became an angel, and he's known as, if you look in the Aramaic now, Nagvasalik Lirakia Bememar Kadom Hashem Ukrashme Metatron Safra Rabba. He became known as Metatron, which is an angel, the great sofer, the great writer, the great scribe. By the way, the other person in Jewish writings who's described as being Safra Rabba, the great scribe, is Moshe Rabbeinu. Ezra's just a sofer. Sofer Hagadol, Safuraba, is Moshe. If you look at the Gemara in Source 27, right before that, Vayamatsha Moshe Safuraba de Israel. That Moshe, the great sofer, when he died, that's who, and it even says that a bat kol came out and said, Vayamat Moshe Safuraba de Israel. Moshe went and died by himself, but a sound came out and says, the great sofer is dead. Chanoch, if it is in this week's parsha, in Bereshit, right? Chanoch. It says, this generation, he lived this many years bore him, he died, and then it goes on, and then it gets to Chanoch, and it just says, and he no longer was, for God took him. Never says he died. So over here, the Midrashim say that he became an angel. He was too fine for this world, he becomes an angel. Now, let's think this through. Adam and Chava, before they sinned, were supposed to be angelic. They were supposed to be like angels. They had a glow about them. They lose the glow. Chanoch and Eliyahu become angels. What is Chanoch? He is a sofer hagadol. In fact, we have a Gemara that describes him working up in heaven. This is a Gemara which talks about four people who were involved in mystical study. One of them was Elisha ben Avuya, who was known as Acher. It's Source 24, top of the page. It says, "Acher kitzetz benetiot alava katav Omer al titenet picha lachtid basarecha." Mayhi, what does that verse mean? Chaza mitatron de yitiyav le reshuta lemeitiv lemeitiv ulemichtav zuchuta di Israel. That he goes up to heaven and he sees mitatron sitting down writing, keeping track of all the good deeds of Israel. That means that mitatron sits in heaven and writes all the good deeds, and this fellow Elisha ben Avuya Acher, he sees him. And by the way, this is part of what happens to him, causes his whole breakdown of belief. Part of his breakdown was that he began to accept a concept of dualism. He saw there's good in the world and there's bad in the world, and he just felt that there must be two different sources for good and bad. They don't come from the same place. Ultimately, though, when you start thinking about good and bad, it takes you right back to the Eitz Hadaat Tov V'Ra. The Eitz Hadaat Tov V'Ra is where we begin to face the problems of bad, because what do you have beforehand? You just have Gan Eden. So if you just have Gan Eden, you don't have a problem of Tov V'ra, you only have Tov, but now you face a world of the two, and what you tend to do is see good and say, okay, good must come from a good source, and you see bad, and bad must come from a bad source. Now, Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, had a very famous student. Do you know who it was? Rabbi Meir. Source 25. Sha'ol Acher, Rabbi Meir, la'acher she'yotze la'tarbut ra'ah. After Acher abandoned Judaism, he asked Rav Meir, "Ma'idachtiv gam etzelu matzeh asalokim? How do you explain that God creates opposites? How do you explain the duality in the world?" And Rav Meir then tries to explain, but you see clearly from his questioning what's bothering Elisha ben Avuya. After Rabbi Meir leaves, or his teacher, and by the way, what's very interesting is that even when he went quote unquote what you would call off the derech, when he loses his belief, Rav Meir doesn't abandon him. And the Gemara tells us of all kinds of conversations they continue to have. The Gemara questions, how can Rav Meir learn from such a person? Source 26, Rav Meir, Heche gomar Torah mipum yada Acher. How can he learn from the mouth of Acher? And he goes on to explain to the Gemara that you should only learn from somebody who's on a very high level. At the end, the Gemara says, Rav Meir, Achel tachla v'shoda shichla levra. That Rav Meir, he ate the fruit and he threw away the pits, or threw away the shell, the klipa. That Rav Meir was able to distinguish between tov v'ra. Now, what is it that gives Rav Meir this ability to be able to distinguish between tov and ra? Is that Rav Meir is somebody who is a sofer. Being a sofer connects Rav Meir with Chanoch and with Moshe. Also being a sofer, it's his notes of Rabbi Akiva's classes that connects the Torah Shebal Peh. Which means Moshe is somebody, by being a sofer, writing the Torah, is a shliach of God. What is a shliach of God? What do you call another word for shliach of God? A malach. So somebody who becomes a shliach of God is somebody who therefore becomes angelic. Rav Meir, who has this ability also to be a sofer, he's somebody who sees the or. Why? Because Rav Meir knows how to distinguish between tov v'ra. And the commentaries point out that v'ra is the same letters as or, ayin vav resh. That when the v'ra comes into the world, that's when the or with the ayin, the skin, replaces. It's also very interesting. What does a sofer do? He takes parchment. What's parchment? It's or. And what do you do with it? Then you put. What was the primordial Torah that existed? It was a Torah of light. But what does the sofer do? The sofer somehow reaches into heaven and pulls down the words of light and puts them down in parchment. So now this or, this parchment, this skin, now becomes something so much more. Rav Meir had two different teachers. One was Elisha ben Avuya. The other was Rabbi Akiva. Elisha ben Avuya became a paid informant for the Romans, and presumably he ended up living out his life in luxury, in the finest of clothes, dying of natural causes in a warm bed covered with the finest of garments. How does Rabbi Akiva die? His skin is taken off. He doesn't have his skin anymore. The skin is gone. But what does Rabbi Meir see even in death? Tov ma'od, tov mavet. He sees God's good in everything. Why? Because he has the ability of connecting to the light before the Eitz Tov V'ra, before the confusion, before the Orla. He has the ability of seeing in everything the thing which is good. And even seeing somebody like Rabbi Akiva, who's killed, his clothes are stripped off of him. His skin is stripped off of him. And you can look at this and say that this is like the ultimate tragedy. And what does Rabbi Meir see? He still is able to see good. And what does he see on Rabbi Akiva? When Rabbi Akiva dies, what does he see on Rabbi Akiva? He sees light. Who's the one who's naked? Is it Elisha ben Avuya? And Rabbi Soloveitchik makes this point in this book, Yimei Karan. Who's the one who dies naked? Is it Rabbi Akiva or is it Elisha ben Avuya? And it depends which clothing you're talking about. Are you talking about physical clothing or are you talking about spiritual clothing? If you're talking about physical clothing, Rabbi Akiva is naked. If you're talking about spiritual clothing, spiritual ones, big de yesha, clothing of salvation, is Rabbi Akiva lacking clothing of salvation? Absolutely not. There was probably never anybody who felt as much clothing of salvation, totally connected to God, despite the fact that he's losing his skin. When Rabbi Meir comes back to this verse and he sees clothing of leather, of skin, of or, he writes next to it in his margin, or, light. The ultimate clothing that we should aspire to is not just to clothe our bodies, but to try to go back and deal with the ramifications of eating from the tree of knowledge of good and bad, yitzadat tov v'ra, of having lost that light, having lost the warmness and the closeness and the protection of God, having lost this total understanding that we are shlichei Hashem, that we are emissaries, messengers of God. And the individual who leads their life, knowing completely that they are a messenger of God, the one who sends you then is always with you. And when they're with you, you're totally clothed. And when you're clothed, you totally feel protected. Rabbi Akiva died naked, without his skin, totally protected. Elisha ben Avuya died in luxury, but he was totally naked inside. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.